Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Welcome, dear listeners. You're listening to us live from Radio Sai Studios at Prashanthi Nilayam. And this is Prem. With me is Arvind, and we are tuning in for this week's afternoon satsang. Just as Raghu concluded, we are taking over the mantle today, and we are continuing with what we were talking about last week. That is, as always, the Ramkatha Rasavahini, the story of Lord Sri Rama as written by our dear Lord. But before we begin, before we start dwelling into the story, as always, let us begin by recapitulating the nectarous name of Lord Rama.
Sri Rama Rama Rameti Rame Rame Manorame Sahasranama Tatulyam Rama Nama Varanane Rama Nama Varanane
Offering our most humble pranams at the lotus feet of our beloved Swami, and of course our salutations to Hanuman, who is ever present wherever the glory of Lord Sri Rama is sung. Welcome, dear listeners. It is my pleasure and privilege to welcome you to this segment on the Ramakatha Rasavahini, the nectar story of Lord Rama as penned by our dear Lord. And we have now moved to that situation where something which is a kind of an anticlimax is about to happen. It has been fixed as the day of coronation, and instead of coronation, what Lord Rama, the person to be crowned as the crown prince, is going to face is going to be something totally different. And this is very, very interesting because it gives us an insight into the character and nature of these different participants of the Ramayana. It is said that it is adversity that brings out the true nature of a person, for in good times and happy times, everybody can appear to be good. It is only adversity that brings out what we truly are. And it is in this time of an adversity, of a difficult situation that gets created, that is when we get to see the pristine, pure character of the different people involved in the Ramayana. And Bhagwan does a wonderful job as an author, as a writer, bringing out these different facets. And I'm sure this is going to be a very, very interesting satsang.
Whenever you read a story, especially when you're introduced to the habit of reading, when people ask you, when you read a novel or a short story or something, they'll ask you, who is the character you like in it? And in general, when you say that you like a certain character, which means that is the character you relate to. And it is said that a good story writer will write the story in such a manner that you will, different people can relate to different characters in that whole story. And I remember when we were going through Ramakatha Rasavahini as part of our undergraduate awareness program, I think it comes sometime in second year of the undergraduate, right? I think you also should have gone through it.
Exactly.
So one of the activities which we had during that awareness week was when the teacher asked, who's your favorite character in the Ramayana? You're supposed to write it down with the reasons. And I can tell you for sure that as many people wrote other characters like Lakshmana and Hanuman and Bharata as their characters, boys who had written the name of Rama. I think that's the beauty of the story, and I think this part of that story especially, Swami is bringing out the beauty in the character of the other, you know, peripheral characters in that whole story, where we spoke of the greatness of Dasharatha a couple of months back when we spoke of how he decided to relinquish the monarchy the moment he found a little bit of senility setting in.
Exactly. You
know, his greatness. And then we spoke of Kaikeyi's greatness last time. And the moment you get that small bit of information which Swami gave many years later of how Kaikeyi was privy to this plan of Lord Rama and his entire avatarhood, and how she took upon herself into the calumny for lifetimes, for ages to come, that brought out her character. And today again we're going to come across a few episodes where some other characters are shining forth in their brilliance.
Well, one other thing that happens, as you said, when we go through these different stories, is that why we find different people to be heroes for each one of us is because we relate to their circumstance in life.
Right.
And then we see that they are responding to that situation in a manner that is so ideal and so much lofty. In a manner in which we possibly can never think. We possibly might brush it away saying, ah, come on, that's a utopian world. I cannot do like that. Let us be practical. And here you see that there are some people apparently doing what would happen in a utopian world. And Swami has always done that. You know, he has always placed idealism as the goal. He has placed idealism as our touchstone, you know, nothing less. There's nothing called a compromise in the name of practicality. This actually brings up another thought in me, Prem. It's possibly slightly divergent thought, but it's an interesting one nevertheless. It came up because, you know, I happened to be reading the Shirdi Sai Satcharita. And in that there is a entire page or quite a few words written about how wonderful it is to just relive the stories of the Lord, or of any saint, or of any man of God. It is said that merely reading these stories is so wonderful because it elevates our desires from worldly ones into real lofty ones which are necessary for our life. It burns away all the other kind of desires. It also makes us get attached to the right things in life and gets us detached from the wrong things in life. As I was reading all this, I was reminded of a question that was asked to, you know, a yogi or a sage or a sannyasi. He's a Himalayan kind of saint who keeps giving talks. And so he was asked this question by, he said, one of his disciples.
Okay.
The disciple asked him, Master, you know, I have great love for you. I love you a lot, and that was seen in his service. Even as he was speaking, he said that this disciple would fetch food for him, and wherever he has to travel, he'll make the best arrangements for him and everything. But he says, but Master, once you start your satsang, you know, I'm bored. I don't sit for your satsangs.
Mm-hmm.
I will tend to you, take care of you, but when the 2 hours that you speak or whatever, that time I go and, you know, engage myself in some other task, just keep myself occupied. Once you're finished, I'm back. Why is it like that, Master? Means I love you a lot. I'm ready to do anything for you, but I simply don't have the interest for satsang. So I found this correlation between what was said in the Shirdi Sai Satcharita and what this master responded. He said, see, you get very uncomfortable because in a satsang, things that you hold very dear to your heart, you actually think that they're dear to your heart, they are what your mind actually desires.
Mm-hmm.
They will come crashing down. They will be burnt to ashes. They will be powdered and smashed. Concepts that you hold very dear and you think that this is the logic with which life has to be lived with, they will come collapsing down. And you're not able to take it. That makes you very uncomfortable. You are not ready for change. And that is why you just want to avoid a satsang itself. You want to avoid a situation that brings up this need for change. You are not ready to change, that is one thing. You don't even want to see the need for change because seeing the need for change makes you uncomfortable. And he said, it's not your fault. Every one of us are in that inertia where we don't like a change. We don't like change. That's why we have that inertia and we want to oppose any change that comes. But it is only spirituality that will give you the equanimity to be able to face changes which may actually alter a situation directly opposite. You know, it might be facing towards the north and the next moment the situation is facing to the south. And even such a kind of drastic change, if you have to be able to take, that is what you need spirituality for. And It is in company of good men, in company of good ideas, in company of the avatar, that such need for change and the ability to change comes through. That is the importance of, you know, Sacharita reading, or importance of satsang, or yes, the importance of going through the lives of masters and sages and saints and the avatar. It gives birth in us to that need for change, and also gives us the strength to, you know, participate in this change and use the change so that it benefits us. And this kind of, you know, idealism touchstone, we will be able to see in today's discussion on the Ramkatha story also, where we will be made to compare our own lives with the pure and unsullied character of such noble souls, that it might actually make us uncomfortable and make us realize how actually cheap and lowly we are in leading our own lives. And the hope is that it will inspire in us also that kind of idealism which has been portrayed by the characters of the Ramayana.
Even as you say, talk about change, I'm reminded of the words of a political analyst.
Hmm.
He says, when status quo becomes unsustainable, change becomes inevitable.
Exactly.
So in a sense, I think what makes that status quo unsustainable is the knowledge of what is right. And that is what you gain by going through these scriptures in the lives of great men. Because it is only knowledge which can make ignorance unsustainable. The moment you know that this is not right, you might not be able to accept it right away, but it will keep nagging you from within, and sometime you will have to turn to it. And as you said, this is a very important point. And the other beautiful thing is, you know, many of us know that this is the right choice. When we go through life, to be not selfish is the right choice. But we don't have the courage to take that step.
And that is why we want to avoid, Prem.
Right.
I don't want to listen to somebody glorifying idealism, because, you know, I don't think I have the strength to stick to idealism.
Right. And, you know, it's like they say, you know, you can never enjoy the joy of skydiving if you don't let go. You have to take that first plunge of fearlessness. And that's what it is. And when you see the characters of such people, and I'm reminded of words of another great master who says that truth is not for the cowardly. Because only when you take that courage to take that right step, that's when you will see that after all the fear was absolutely baseless. And especially in a story like Ramayana, you know, you first curse somebody like Dashrathai, saying that he's being a weak husband, he should have put Kaikeyi in place. Or people who don't know the story of Ramayana completely might blame Kaikeyi or Manthara or somebody. But when you see that entire picture, you realize that everybody is just a pawn in the Lord's hand.
And nobody can be blamed.
Nobody can be blamed. And that is what you realize, that maybe the only thing in front of me is the situation, and if I can just make the right move and just sit back, everything is going to be in place. That's the lesson every scripture teaches us, and I think this particular part of the story, which originally comes from the Ayodhya Kanda of the Ramayana, is a very important part in that story. And I think we are saying this for every part of the story we have narrated, that this is the critical part, this is the important part, and I think we can't be more right than that.
Exactly. Dear listeners, believe us that whenever we are going through different parts of the story, different facets and different aspects of the story strike us, and we feel that, oh my God, this is so important. So please forgive us now and for all the future episodes where we will be saying that this is a very important part of the story, because I guess every part of the Ramayana is very important. And here we have now that Sumantra is exiting the royal palace of King Dasharatha from the chambers of Queen Kaikeyi. And he has seen a most shocking sight where both the king and queen appear to be disheveled, and they are the king is prostrate on the floor, he is lying, he seems to have collapsed more so, and he has spoken in a very, very weak tone, asking Sumantra to summon Rama at the earliest. And not able to comprehend what might be going on, Sumantra rushes out of the palace, and he now has to head towards Rama's palace. Now here again, you know, Swami gives those little details which make the story so beautiful. Even as Sumantra comes out of the palace, there is a big group of people early in the morning waiting and looking eagerly at both Rama's palace as well as Dasharatha's palace. This is because a very, very big event, that is the coronation of Lord Rama, is about to happen. And everyone is eager to get whatever little tidbit, juicy tidbit they can get, any news it can get. We can compare this to how we would look towards Yajur Mandir and the Mandir awaiting for Swami to come. And you know, Prem, when we are looking at Yajur Mandir, suddenly Swami's driver or somebody who accompanies Swami or anybody, you know, walks out and we are all looking eagerly at that person who walks out. Is he possibly bringing some news? Is he heralding Swami's arrival? Because anything linked to Swami is of great joy and excitement for us, and that is how we would look forward to anybody exiting the Yajur Mandir.
Let me tell you one very interesting thing which used to happen. You know, there used to be a light under the pillar which is opposite Swami's Yajur Mandir door.
Okay.
Okay, just, it's actually one of the pillars of the Purnachandra Auditorium.
Hmm.
And under that balcony, there's one balcony which is closer to Kulunthal, right? Under that, there used to be a chandelier.
Hmm.
And for many years, we had this idea that when the lights come on, when those chandeliers come on, Swami has come down.
Hmm.
So, approximately about 20 minutes to 45 minutes after that light comes on, Swami will come out for darshan. And this was something which was so stuck in our head, we used to follow it. In the moment the lights are seen, we won't go for breakfast, we won't go, you know, we know that we have to be there for the next half an hour or so. And so we would, you know, call our friends and say the lights are on, the lights are on, everybody used to come and... We used to follow it for so many years, till much later when we met one of the boys who used to stay in Swami's room, who had, when we told him that this is how we, you know, because he was surprised that, you know, sometimes Swami comes at 7 o'clock, your boys are here. Sometimes Swami comes at 7:45, still boys are here. So we told him that, you know, we follow this pattern of seeing the lights. And that is when he said, those lights have nothing to do with Swami coming down or coming out.
Oh, oh, oh.
He said, it's just the Sevadal, whenever he comes in, he switches on the light, that's all.
Oh, okay.
You know, as you said, we all used to have our own patterns of when to expect Swami, when Swami would come for darshan, or you know, the days when Swami would come out early in the afternoon for darshan.
I don't know if I've narrated this before, but it was another funny episode where, you know, the Veda group would always be there chanting Vedas, and this is especially for the morning darshan. Because after 2009 or something, the morning darshan became a sort of, you know, you don't know whether Swami will come or not. So Vedas would go on, bhajans would go on. I wanted to ensure that whenever Swami comes for darshan, I am there having darshan. But at the same time, since the office begins by 8:30, I want to be in the office by 8:30. But if Swami comes, I want to rush and have darshan. So I had told somebody in the Vedam group that the minute you get an indication, you know, people in front of Yajur Mandir, they line up and they're ready. That is a sure shot indication that Swami is coming. With folded hands, they stand. And within 2-3 minutes of that, Swami comes. So if they line up, I had told them that you give me a missed call. You know, a missed call, I don't know if it, I think it's a purely Indian concept where you dial somebody's number and you cut before the other person picks. So
it's a definitely a new semantic concept. It's a future past. No, you give a missed call.
You give a missed call, yeah. You. So I had told some people in the Vedam group to give me a missed call so that, so the minute my phone rings for 2 seconds and stops, I know Swami is coming, so I would just leave whatever work I was doing and I would rush in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while this was my signal, there was a Sevadal who was doing duty at the gate through which we would enter, the student's entry gate, student and staff entry gate. And he had a, he used to observe that whenever I come in, within 2 minutes of me coming in, Swami comes for darshan. Or sometimes even half a minute.
Okay.
So for him, the indication was when this guy walks in, Swami is going to come. If this guy doesn't come, Swami is not going to come. For some reason, he made this association. So one day, he actually caught hold of me and he said, sir, you're very, very blessed. You have a great connection with Swami. I was not understanding. I was thinking that possibly because I take photos and I appear to be physically close, he's assuming a kind of inner connect also. He said, I have seen, sir, you already know when Swami is going to come. And you come, and whenever you come, Swami comes. Before I could speak, he said, I know, it is intuition. I know it's that inner connection. I just want to know how you experience it. So I did not know. I said, sir, it comes like a vibration. Sometimes I hear it also. Then he said, where, sir? And he pointed to the position between the eyebrows, you know. He said, is it here that you feel the vibration? I said, no, it is here, and pointed to my left thigh, you know. And he was shocked, and I pulled out a cell phone and I said, see, this is nothing, there's nothing great spiritual secret about it. Somebody gives me a call and therefore I come, so it's not some inner connect and all that.
It's not
so,
Akashvani.
It is not. So yes, as you said, all of us have our own ways of deciphering, and that is exactly what happened to Sumantra. Even as Sumantra came out, there were everybody looking at him and trying to judge what might be happening based on the way he was walking to the chariot. He's sitting on the chariot and going to Rama's palace. So
I think this entire description that Swami gives is to show what a moment that was. Because Swami is saying that the whole city is agog, everybody is standing there waiting for that slightest indication when Rama will come out, when that coronation procedure will start. Oh, now the minister has been called. Oh, now the minister is coming to the, you know, the prince's chamber. That anticipation, Swami, is so beautifully
Has the coronation been advanced? Is Rama being summoned earlier? So, oh, if he's being summoned earlier, you know, we have planned a elaborate, you know, ritual, throwing flowers, trumpeting bands and dance and all that. So we better tell them all to hurry up. You know, when you read this, you remember so much the same thing, you know, Swami is, suppose, you know, in every summer, Swami would return from Vrindavan to Parthi. And as he has started off, we would start getting news. When we are in the class, Bhagwan has started from Vrindavan. So we know that one next 1.5 hours he'll be in Parthi, which means there'll be only one more hour of class, after which the next class is gone. So we are very happy about that. At the same time, you know, the dancing troops, everybody is being kept readied. Suddenly something would happen where Swami might make a stop at Mudanhalli, or he might make a stop at Bagheparli, because of which it gets delayed by another 15-20 minutes. Or sometimes he drives faster and they say, you know, Swami is already reached, Swami has reached, Swami has reached. I remember the excitement with which, or the kind of urgency with which they would come and say, Swami is reaching, fast, fast. You know, now everything had to be hurried up, because there would be these 9 escort boys who will go till the super speciality hospital, and from there 9 or 10 of them on the bike, they would escort Swami's car. So they have to be there before Swami's car arrives, and they would be the ones who would be the most panicky. So when we read Ramayana, when we read how Swami writes, it is the same kind of excitement, and we can so well relate to it. Everyone, so naturally all the dancers, the children, they have to be summoned. Are they dressed properly already? Because it looks like the coronation has to be advanced. So all this is happening while Sumantra, you know, he just cannot communicate. He knows that it is not exactly the joyous thing. Something is amiss because of what he has seen in the palace. But he cannot communicate that. And so therefore he is just smiling to everybody on the way, and he is headed to Rama's palace. He enters Rama's palace and he... And
there again, a very interesting detail which Swami gave. I mean, at least it caught my eye. Swami says that Sumantra enters Rama's palace, which is a 7-storied mansion. Swami specifically says that, 7-storied. You know, to think of the architecture in that time, to have a 7-storied mansion. And it was not mentioned as something which was odd. So there must have been other mansions too, which were multi-storied.
Wow. I didn't notice that, and it's definitely an interesting point. So he enters a mansion, and I guess there must be a place, the sanctum where the Lord is.
Right.
And so he definitely has the permission to go right up till Rama's room, because he is the minister. And that's where he goes, and he immediately tells Rama that, oh Rama, you have been summoned by your father and Kaikeyi the queen. And at this point, even as he says it, Sita is overjoyed, because she, being Rama's wife, she knows that this is going to be a very big day, because she is the other half, she is the Ardhangini for Rama, and any day that is so big in Rama's life is definitely big in Sita's life also. Even as she is very happy seeing Sumantra coming and summoning Rama, she also gets a slight doubt, why to Kaikeyi's palace, Kaikeyi's place, but whatever it might be, it is something happy and good that the king is, the emperor is summoning. At that time itself, Rama tells Sita that, Sita, this is something different. Be ready, you know, something that we are not expecting might happen. You can see Rama throwing hints. And even as he throws hints like this, Sita says, come on, Rama, I mean, come on, she doesn't say come on, but she says, Rama, this is such an auspicious day, what wrong can happen, what bad can happen? I think you that you are simply getting nervous, or you are anticipating things that cannot be happening. But Rama still sticks to his guns, and
Rama tells that, you know, ever since the coronation was announced, I felt there was something impending, something was happening. And he said, this is a sign of an obstacle which I am not unaware of. That's what he says. So very clearly, but you know, the way Swami describes that entire scene where he's sitting regally there, Sita is standing by his side and fanning him, and there is apparently a small discussion going between them. But in the very same calm demeanor, he tells her about this, you know, this is an obstacle which is coming, so we should be prepared for it. There is no change in the delight which is in his face. And that is the beauty where Swami describes, where he walks towards the palace of Kaikeyi. But even as he comes out, you know, all the people think that it's the time to start the celebrations.
In the meanwhile, something interesting happens. You know, when Rama tells these things, mm-hmm. hinting at a possible change in situation, Sumantra, you know, has a kind of flashback. He's immediately revisiting the scenes, and he's also thinking, oh my God, how did I miss it? It's almost like the Sherlock Holmes, right. Dr. Watson kind of scene, where Dr. Watson sees everything, but he's not able to draw the conclusions that Sherlock Holmes draws without even seeing the scene. And when Sherlock Holmes explains, it seems like elementary for him. And that is what is happening to Sumantra, you know, as Rama is saying these, he's thinking, oh yes, correct, something wrong it is, oh yes. And Rama actually even hints that, you know, Rama says that the day is a good day, and it is good whether the coronation happens or not. So that is when Sumantra is woken up to a reality that could possibly happen, which is the coronation being cancelled. And then when he starts putting together the scenes of all that he has seen, Sumantra now starts getting nervous, and he feels that there might be something true in the apparently horrible thing that Rama is saying. And it is with this kind of trepidation he gets ready to drive the chariot and take Rama and Sita towards the palace. And even as he comes out, everybody is ready now, you know, because they are expecting Rama to be led to the palace. And that is what is happening. They don't know that he has been summoned actually to Kaikeyi's chambers. And therefore, Sumantra actually pleads with all the people who are gathered there, saying that, you know, don't start blowing the trumpets, don't start throwing flowers, don't start the dances, because, you know, Rama is not headed to the palace proper. Yes, he is not going to the coronation hall. He has been summoned to Kaikeyi's chambers, to Mother Kaikeyi's chambers, and that's where I am taking him. So kindly hold on for a moment. But how much can you hold on? I mean, even whether Swami would go for a drive or whether Swami was leaving for Vrindavan, the flowers would be thrown, the people would celebrate, the people would be enthralled by just seeing him, right? That is what happens even in Rama's case. Even though Sumantra has made his entreaties, even as Rama is proceeding on the chariot, people are throwing flowers, they are blowing the trumpets, they are happy, they are dancing. It is just a day for joy, and the slightest reason is enough for the people to celebrate. And when Rama himself is coming on the chariot, what bigger reason do you need?
And that is when they finally go to the palace of Kaikeyi, and there he's, as soon as he enters, he sees this scene and he, you know, kind of comes to the conclusion that something is really wrong, because Dashrata is there on the floor, his hair is unkept, and he notices that he's wearing the same clothes that he saw his father in the previous day, which means he's been lying there whole night and he's not gone for his morning ablutions and prayers. And there Kaikeyi also is not in a very presentable state, because as we described, she's thrown away all her jewels and she's, you know, disturbed her hair to create that impact of, you know, she being upset.
And because Rama is who Rama is, he knows that what is going to happen there is something not so good in the eyes of the world. Of course, for him, there's nothing like good and bad. He is beyond good and bad. He is beyond all these. But in the eyes of the world, it is not something that is good, and therefore he tells Sita and even Lakshmana, who has arrived by then, he tells them to stay outside itself. He doesn't allow them to enter the chambers, and Rama walks in the courtyard, and he has come alone actually to the presence of the king and the queen and his queen mother. And the first thing that strikes him is whatever might have been Dasharatha's situation in life, whether he's happy, whether he's sad, whether he's down, whether he's depressed, frustrated, excited, Rama's arrival would take him to an excitement of an entirely different level. He would become so happy, and the first thing he couldn't resist doing was to embrace Rama warmly. Oh my Rama, oh my Rama. And for the first time in his life today, Dasharatha doesn't do that. And Rama knows from that itself that something has gone wrong. And that is what he tells to his father also, he says, Father, what is it that has happened to you? Why is it that you are weeping? And even as Rama talks with such love, Dasharatha can only moan out, Rama, Rama, and he begins to collapse. And Rama says, Father, what has happened? This is, you are the strength for the entire family. You are the pillar of support. And you cannot collapse like this. What is it? What untoward has happened? Has Mother Kaikeyi spoken something harshly in anger or something which has hurt you? Or has Dasharatha and Shatrughna, Bharata and Shatrughna, my brothers, who have gone to Kaikeya kingdom, met with some misfortune? What is it that is making you tremble like a leaf like this and making you dumbstruck? You are unable to speak and say what has happened. And Father, every time, whatever be your situation, the worst of situations, you have found great solace in just embracing me, and I have found such solace in that hug. Why is it that I am not even getting that? And this is how Rama asks his own father, Dasharatha, and seeing no response from Dasharatha, he begins to ask Mother Kaikeyi.
Right, because one thing is Dasharatha is so, he's fallen for that blow, and he's constantly, falling unconscious because of that pain and that depression. So that's when Swami describes how Rama sits down, places Dasharatha's head on his lap, and he's trying to caress him back to some courage to speak out what is troubling him. That is when he turns to Mother Kaikeyi and he asks the same thing. What is the thing?
He says,
right.
Mother, you tell me, Mother, what is it? Whatever it might be, I don't know why both of you are not speaking. Let me assure you that whatever it be that your heart desires, I am ready to do. Now at this moment, Kaikeyi says, it is nothing, it's not anything of a big deal. I don't know why your father is making such a big deal out of it. At this point, again, Prem, I would like to, remind all our listeners that we have to put ourselves into two shoes. One of the acting Kaikeyi and the other of the redeemed Kaikeyi, which Swami has said, how tough it must have been for Kaikeyi to continue to act hard-hearted and cruel-hearted and cold-hearted towards Rama. She just, paces out her blows one after another in quick succession. She says that, Rama, there were these two promises that your father had given me. She narrates that story of how she saved the Dasharatha during the war with the demons. And then she says, now came the time when I asked for those two boons, and your father had promised that he will give these two boons irrespective of what time it is, irrespective of when it is, where it is. These two boons I can ask anytime, any way, any manner, and therefore I chose to ask them now. And they are simple. The first boon is that Bharata be crowned in your place, and the second boon is that you go to the Dandaka forest for an exile of 14 years. And Rama says, that's it? That's all, is it, Mother? She says, yes, that's all it is, and he has collapsed like this because it's without doubt that he is very, very attached to you, and that attachment is causing him pain, I think, and that is why he has collapsed like this. So Rama says, oh, Mother, I shall gladly do this. What is there? What is the problem? There is nothing at all. Whether Bharata rules or whether I rule, it is the same for Ayodhya because I know my Bharata. Rama extols the glories of Bharata. And then he says, 14 years is nothing. If my father wishes, I can spend the entire life, my entire life in the forest. So why is it that Dasharatha, why is it, Father, that you are hesitant to speak this out? Do you have any doubt of whether I will obey you or not? And don't you have trust in your son that he will implicitly obey all your orders? Don't you have that much faith in your son? These words actually, start puncturing Dasharatha's heart even more. And while on one hand, Rama's humility and love as a human is supreme, I couldn't help thinking, Prem, that as divinity, Rama knew, right, the kind of throes that his father's heart would receive as he even spoke this. But that is sometimes the ways of the divine, it looks like, that we don't understand, but the divine has to do what the divine has to do.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what he's done in his play with Kaikeyi too. Because after this, even as this discussion is going on, Dasharatha starts shouting abuses against Kaikeyi, saying that he does not approve of this, though he is quite helpless. And he also knows from the words of Rama that there is no way he is going to stop Rama from following it. Once he has got the knowledge of the situation, there is no way that Dasharatha would, through his attachment, stop Rama from following what he has promised Kaikeyi. So it's kind of, he's also knows that it's inevitable that Rama is going to follow it. But now Kaikeyi feels that there might be a situation where Dasharatha might convince him. So she takes on and says, no, you'll have to do this because your father will not tell you. The father is attached to you. The father will not have the courage to give you this command. But will you not obey me? And that's why Rama says that for me there's no difference. What the monarch says is as much important to me as what you say as a mother. So I will take it. But he makes a proposal. You know, he says, me leaving Ayodhya is going to be a mortal blow for my father. So if it can be coinciding with the coronation of Bharata, maybe that will give some solace to him. So if you can send, if you can send word for Bharata immediately, and if that event can happen simultaneously, it would give some solace. So immediately Kaikeyi thinks that that will take about 15 days. And till then you don't know. There could be a mutiny in the army. There could be a revolt in the city. You don't know what is going to come. But again, you know, when you don't know the other side of Kaikeyi, when you read this, she puts forth a very interesting argument. She says, the faster you go, the faster you can come back. If you see that evil side of Kaikeyi without knowing her side, which was revealed by Swami later, you feel how cruel and cunning a statement is that. But when you know the real Kaikeyi, when you know the love which Kaikeyi bore in her heart for Rama, she really meant it. She said, if you go early, you can come back early. Meaning that I am waiting for the day when this 14 years are going to end and when you will come back here.
And you know, just in the same light, she says that, you know, if Bharata comes, he is another variable in the equation. He is going to change things.
Right.
Bharata comes here and gets to know that Rama is going, he is definitely going to stop Rama. And now I am speaking from the redeemed Kaikeyi point of view. And if Bharata stops Rama, Rama is not able to go to the Dandaka forest. He is unable to complete his mission. And therefore, it is going to become a problem. And it is my promise to Rama that I shall ensure that he can go to the Dandaka forest. So, come what may, I have to do it. But the world as we, you know, the world, from a world's point of view, as we perceive Kaikeyi, she looks like a very scheming woman. She's like, oh my God, if Bharata comes, he's going to change the equation and it might end up with Rama being the prince again. I mean, Rama being the king again. And therefore, it is best, O Rama, that you leave immediately. Bharata crowning, we will look into it later. But as of now, I think you should get ready and at the earliest possible, leave for the forest. And that is exactly what Rama does, you know. Rama takes blessings of his father and Kaikeyi, mother Kaikeyi. And even as he walks out, Swami writes that he refuses the silver umbrella. He has already given up the kingdom. I mean, in an instant, this kind of detachment is not possible unless you have only Atmabhimana, which is attachment to your true inner self, where you are not attached to anything else. He refuses to wear those princely silken slippers. He refuses to use the chariot because now he wants to go to his mother Kausalya's palace and convey the news to her that he is going to go to the forest. So, in an instant, he has already transformed himself from a going-to-be emperor into a kind of a mendicant who is going to wander in the forests. And this kind of equanimity, where he is able to walk the highest of peaks and the depths, the nadirs of abysmal lows, this is something that we have to learn from Rama. And that is what Bhagwan in his discourse clip also, he emphasizes on. He says, this equanimity of Rama is something that is amazing, and it will be wonderful that we hear the same from in Bhagwan's golden voice.
Right. This is a discourse which Swami delivered during the Ramanavami of the year 99, so 25th of March 99 to be more precise. Swami is talking about this equanimity of Rama, which is one of the most important lessons which has to be learned from this part of the story.
You, the divinity.
Rama tattvam anetundi enta pavitramaitundi tattvam.
What noble, exalted is
human. Patta abhishekamunaku siddhanga undinatundi Ramudu.
Rama was ready for coronation.
Mari kshanamulopane ade navutone anandanga adaviki vendadu.
Rama had the same smiling face when he was asked to get into the exile as the one he had at the time of coronation. He had the equal mindedness or equanimity in times of pleasure and pain. Happiness he had at the time of coronation is very much the same when he was asked to go to exile. Where are such qualities?
అధికారం లేనటువంటి దాన్ని ఆకర్షించడానికి ప్రయత్నిస్తున్నాడు.
పీపుల్ వాంట్ పొజిషన్ అథారిటీ.
అధికారమే లేనటువంటి దాన్ని తాను అందుకోవడానికి ప్రయత్నిస్తున్నాడు.
Though he has no deservedness, he wants.
అనర్హుడైనటువంటి మానవుడు అర్హతకు ప్రాప్తిస్తున్నాడు.
An undeserving fellow wants position.
అర్హుడైనటువంటి రాముడు కూడాను అధికారాన్ని ఆశించలేదు.
Rama, though eligible, he didn't want position.
అన్నింటి ఎందుకును ధీరుడైనటువంటి యొక్క రాములకు ఏమాత్రం కూడా దీనత్వం రాలేదు.
In fact, Rama was highly courageous, but he was never dean or weak.
రామ సంఘాన్ని పొందినటువంటి వాడి కూడాను ధీరత్వం వస్తుంది కానీ దీనత్వం రాదు.
The one who is in company of Rama will have dheera, the courage, never dheena, the weakness.
You know, we've spoken about this when we were doing the Satyam Shivam Sundaram series, the letter which Swami wrote to his brother. You know, in that, Swami says that what he wants to do, what is his task. One of the lines which he writes in that letter is, to treat loss and gain as equal is devotion for me. Now, my definition of devotion is that person who is able to treat loss and gain with equality.
Equanimity.
Equanimity. And, you know, this the last statement that Swami makes in that discourse clip, he says that this equanimity comes out of courage. Because he was a dhirudu. Swami is saying that Rama was courageous, so he could exhibit that equanimity. And you will exhibit that equanimity if you completely believe that that Lord is beside you. And that is why Swami says that devotion should express itself as equanimity. And only that is devotion for me, not what you do as devotion, singing bhajans or, you know, whatever you do as expressions of devotion, I don't consider as devotion. Devotion is that equanimity at the when loss or gain faces you.
You know, Swami speaks of dhira, dhira meaning one who has no fear, one who is courageous. This fearlessness can come only out of desirelessness. Because the minute we have desire, there is automatically the fear of non-fulfillment of the desire. Any desire it can be. Any desire breeds along with it the fear of non-fulfillment of the desire, which can further lead to frustration because of non-fulfillment, and then anger, and then loss of intellect, as Lord Krishna puts it in the Bhagavad Gita. So, one of the root causes for fear is desire in itself. And if a person has to be a dhira, or one who is fearless, one has to be a person who is desireless. And that is what Rama is. That is what Rama is. He has no desire at all. His whole being is not touched by the blemish of even one desire. And therefore, he has nothing to fear. And that is why Swami says in the end of the discourse clip that not only Rama, anyone who is associated with Rama also is a dhirudu. And actually in the discourse, Swami goes on to speak about Hanuman, saying of how he was so brave, how he had no fear at all. And he says, anybody, the Lord and anybody associated with the Lord will have no fear, which means, you know, it's also a message, Prem. We have to see through the subtle message that Swami delivers, that if we have to truly be a person of God, if we have to be Swamis, just as Hanuman was Rama's, we have to be desireless ourselves. We should not have anything like a desire of our own, and our desire should just be whatever the Master desires, because the Master desires always the good for the entire creation.
You know, to say the least, we all are slaves of logic. You know, we all go by logic. But even going by logic, this is the simplest thing, but somehow it's so difficult to understand. I remember many years ago reading a book on science where he was saying how all your textbooks which show you the solar system are actually got the scale completely wrong. Because if you were to draw the sun and this earth and the other planets to scale, he was just describing how awry the whole image will become.
You'll not be able to see the planets at all.
Right, because that's how huge the universe is. I mean, how huge the solar system is. And you can imagine how much more huge the universe is. And to imagine that the Lord who has created this whole stuff, okay, you are cribbing about a small problem and you are letting fear enter your heart because of a problem. And you know, just think of it for a moment from Swami's point of view. How utterly silly it is. You know, Swami will think, you know, I've done this whole thing, man. The sun is in place. The moon is able to stand on its own in the middle of space. The earth is rotating. It's all because of me. And don't you think I can solve your or handle your little problem? How really illogical and silly it is of you. So when Swami says that the Lord Rama is that Lord of the courage and He's standing by you, there is absolutely no reason for you to fear unpleasant turn of events. It is more than anything, it's logical.
Lord Rama now walks out of the palace, and Lakshmana, again, you know, Swami has often praised Lakshmana as the one with sukshma buddhi, one who is of subtle intellect. He notices and he immediately knows what is happening. He knows for sure that his brother Rama is not going to be crowned, because here is Rama. This is the day when he is supposed to be decked with ornaments, when glory is supposed to be added unto him in a materialistic manner, in the sense that if till now there was a silver umbrella being carried for him, it has to now become a golden umbrella with diamonds and other precious stones. And here is Rama refusing even the silver umbrella, refusing a footwear, refusing the chariot, and walking towards Mother Kausalya's chambers. So, though Rama does not convey to Lakshmana that I have been, you know, exiled and I am supposed to start it as soon as possible, Lakshmana has already understood everything, and he also marches along with his brother, and both the brothers go to the upper chambers of Mother Kausalya. And Mother Kausalya is in great joy, because what greater moment for a mother than to see her son receiving glory and adoration from everyone around. You know, being a fan of cricket, I remember that day when the hero of Indian cricket, that Sachin Tendulkar, when he was playing his last test match, that was the only day when he got his own mother to the cricket stadium. And when we read in his autobiography, it's beautiful to see the emotions and sentiments that both the mother and son go through. Because this is such a special day, the whole world is watching. In fact, it was towards the end of the day that even the cricketer Sachin Tendulkar was honored with the Bharat Ratna, the greatest civilian award. So, the kind of pride and joy that the mother felt, she could express it only through her tears, and she just blessed her son. She didn't speak anything on that day. So, for such a worldly thing itself, when the mother is able to celebrate and rejoice in the joys of her son, one can only imagine what is the kind of joy and satisfaction that must have been coursing through Kausalya. And that is why in this moment when she sees Rama, she just embraces him, blesses him, and she is supremely happy. But she also notices that behind her, Lakshmana is apparently on the verge of tears, and something seems to be amiss. And that is when Rama tells her, you know, Rama actually tells Kausalya that, mother, you know, it is father's command that Bharata be crowned. Again, the same manner, Kausalya is slightly shocked, but it is when Rama reveals that apart from Bharata being crowned, he has to be banished. He is going to exile to the forest.
Actually, the scene very beautifully described. You know, the little details which Swami throws in so that we can picturize it. We could go into endless debates where, you know, in some discourses Swami describes it a little differently. In this discourse, in the Ramakatha Rasamani, Swami writes it differently. The idea is to get into the story and to, you know, experience what each of those characters experienced. In that particular time when Rama goes to Kausalya's chambers, he describes that is when Kausalya herself is getting ready for the coronation. The moment she sees Rama, she says that, did you also observe the night vigil? Did you also keep a fast? So you wouldn't have eaten anything, and that's why...
These are the practices. Right. One must do before
the coronation.
Okay.
You know? So both Rama and Sita, we spoke about that, where Dashrata instructs Rama and Sita, and Kausalya herself being the Rajmata, you know, she also goes through that vigil. So the moment she sees Rama, you know, she might be seeing the monarch to be in front of her, but it's the son whom she sees in him, and she says, you've not eaten the whole night. So makes him sit, and she brings a golden plate filled with fruits and starts feeding Rama. And that's when Rama reveals, he says, mother, no more I can take food which is offered to me in a golden vessel. So she says, why? You're going to become the monarch, and this is but befitting that you eat from such royal ware. And that is when Rama says, no, I have to wear the garb of a mendicant and go out into the forest. I have been exiled for 14 years. And that, you know, she says, I know that you have a good sense of humor, but this is not the time to crack such a cruel joke.
Exactly. And even as she says this, he observes that Lakshmana is sobbing and, you know, he's shedding profuse tears. And in her heart, in the mother's heart, she already has sensed that there is truth in what Rama has said. And therefore, she now knows, because Rama is her son, she has seen the way his determination is, the way he takes decisions. She knows that what Rama is saying is true. And if he is saying that he will be going to the forest, no force on earth can stop him from going to the forest, because Rama, okay mata, okay bana, okay patni, that is his vow, that only one wife, one arrow, one word. Once a word is given, he will not go back on it. And so Kausalya instantly, you know, in a moment decides, and she says, Rama, I'm coming along with you. There is no Ayodhya for me without you. I have waited for years and years without a child, and you have been the tapofala, you have been the fruit of my penance, you have been the fruit of the penance of not only me, my husband, you know, and you are the light of my life. You are the only reason for my joy in life. And on such a momentous occasion, you'll just leave and go. I'm fine with your decision. I'm fine that you have been commanded and you're doing so, but I will also come along with you. Again, this discussion is something that Swami beautifully narrates, of how Rama and Kausalya speak. It may be a small clip over here. This is, I think, from
the Ramnavami discourse of 2003,
which, right, Bhagwan delivered in Vrindavan. So we'll just listen to that clip and then come back to the discussion.
Kausalya nivasamunaku vachadu.
He came to the residence of Kausalya.
Kausalya chala aanandamto kaachukoni unnadi.
Kausalya was very joyfully expecting.
Ee naadu Ramuniki pattabhishekam kada, etti aanandamto, etti alankaramto naa grahamu chertaado ani vedir chustu undedi.
She was expecting Rama to be coronated on that day. She expected him to come with royal garments on him.
Kaani naarachinalu katti vachinatuvanti Rama Sitanu chusi Kausalya chala vicharapadindi.
Kausalya was worried on seeing the dress of Rama and Sita, who came with
Shiva.
Is this the type of garment you should wear on this day? Then Rama smiled and said,
Amma, Ma Tandi and Dasaratadu, Inadu Naku, Rajamu Katyad Pattabhishekam.
Mother, this morning father wanted to be
coronated.
What type of coronation it is?
Ayodhya Rajyamana Karu. Aranya Rajyamana Naku Kattadu.
It is not the kingdom of Ayodhya, it is the kingdom of Aranya.
Aranya Mandu, Rakshasalu, Anekamandi Kastamul Cheta, Ryogulu, Gogulu, Jogulu in 21 Munulanu, Badistu Naru.
In the forest today, the demons are troubling and harming the great sages, saints and the recluses.
Atti Munisancharamulaku Bayalderi in 21 Etti Abhyantaramu Chepana Karledu.
And when I am going to protect those sages, you need not have to object. Rama saluted his mother, saying, I will go to the forest and come back. And this is the way I am going to obey the command of my father. Maybe you want to obey your father, but I am your mother. And I am half of the body of your father. You have to follow my command also. Therefore, you take me also with you to the forest.
అన్నతమ్ముల యొక్క సంబంధము ఎంత అన్యోన్యమైనటువంటిది, ఎంత అనురాగమైనటువంటిది, ఎంత ప్రాప్యమైనటువంటిది, ఎంత ప్రాప్యమైనటువంటిది.
Thus we find in Ramayana the relation between the mother and son and among the brothers was so sweet, wonderful, loving and harmonious.
ఇట్టి అన్యోన్యతను ఈనాడు జగత్తునకు చూపించే నిమిత్తమై ఈ రామాయణం అనేటువంటి జన్మదినమును ఉత్సవంగా చేసుకోమని చెప్పి ప్రజలకందరికీ బోధిస్తూ వచ్చారు.
And that is why today Ramayana is being taught as a demonstration of that sweet relation among the brothers.
So, that is a very powerful argument that she presents. The word Ardhangini means the other half. In fact, Kausalya tells Rama that I am the other half of Dasharatha. It is not right on his part to take a decision unilaterally. If he says, it is his half saying, commanding you to go to the forest. My half doesn't agree to command you, but I know that once your word is given, you will not change, and therefore I will also follow you to the forest. And even as she says this, Lakshmana seems to back her up. You know, he also tells Rama, Rama, you may say that father's word is supreme, but Matra Devo Bhava, and it is Pitru Devo Bhava only after that. First we are taught that mother is God, and then the next God is father. So when your mother is telling you to stay back, don't you, I mean, it is right that you listen to your mother. What she's saying is absolutely fine. It is in response to this that Rama actually reminds Kausalya that her foremost duties is that as an Ardhangini, as she rightly said, and therefore, since she is the other half of the monarch, she is the other half of Dasharatha, it is not right on her part to leave Dasharatha and come with him. And therefore, she must stay with Dasharatha. And in response to Lakshmana's comment, Rama says that, you know, it is not my father who commanded me. It is the emperor of the kingdom who has commanded me. And when the emperor commands, it is for the welfare of the whole society. It is for the sake of the welfare of society and for the welfare of kingdom that the emperor has commanded me. It is now my mother and father who are trying to stop me. The emperor has already commanded me, so I will listen, obey to the wishes of the emperor. It is not the question of a mother versus father battle here. It is the question of individual versus society here. And therefore, what is good for the society is what I have to do. And what the emperor has commanded me is what I have to do. And at this point, even, you know, Lakshmana also realizes that it is lost, that Rama is going to go. And that is when there is a very, very angry outburst. Lakshmana is infuriated at the situation. He says, Rama, no, you cannot go. You be here, Rama. You be and rule the kingdom. I will protect with my bows and arrows. Let me see who will come in the way. If needed, I will... If Bharata comes, I will fight against Bharata. Nobody will be matched to my arrows. I will subdue everybody and you will rule. Before this nonsensical order is issued, you better take hold of the kingdom and take reins. Because what that evil Kaikeyi has done is very, very vile, it is treacherous, she is wicked, and father has fallen victim to his own senses, and therefore he is keeping quiet. And you know, Lakshmana says, I don't even know if father has authorized this. You know, after all, throughout it was Kaikeyi who was speaking. It was not Dasharatha who told you what has to be done. So you can't even consider it as the command of the emperor.
You know, the beautiful thing of any story like this, especially the way Swami has written it, it is in a sense a mirror for ourselves, you know, to look at it and see what mistakes we tend to do. Because what Lakshmana is doing here is a typical example of that. Just some time back, we spoke of how the whole of Ayodhya was rejoicing at the decision of Dasharatha. And it was said that, you know, he's such a great king that he's made such a wise decision. He wants to crown Ayodhya. But the moment this decree comes that you have to be exiled and you have to go to the forest, Lakshmana starts questioning the intellectual prowess of Dasharatha. He says that he is clouded by his attachment to Kaikeyi. He is clouded by his lust for his favorite queen. And that is what is making him make such decisions. So he is not a sensible king, and it is not necessary to follow the orders of a monarch who is under the grasp of his lust and greed. Mm. And he says, so you don't have to follow him. You know, this is what happens when somebody takes a decision which is not in alignment to what is good for us or what is favorable to us. We start questioning the reasoning of that person. You know, these are the things which Swami shows, that these are the mistakes which you might tend to do. Be careful of them.
Rama beautifully counters this allegation. You know, he tells Lakshmana, you calm down. Lakshmana is also called as Ashutosha and Ashukopa, means right. Along with Lord Shiva, he is also said to be a one who is easily angered and one who is easily calmed also. And now that we saw the Ashukopa of Lakshmana, It is the time for Ashutosha because Rama calms him and he reminds Lakshmana. He says, Lakshmana, what you say is true that it was Mother Kaikeyi who told everything. But you know, if what she was saying was a lie, if what she was saying was wrong, then isn't it logical that the emperor, our father Dasharatha, would have stopped her? He did not stop her. He allowed her to go on, which therefore shows that what she is saying is absolutely true. It is just that because he is so emotionally attached to us, he is emotionally attached to me, father is unable to speak anything. So there is no question of it being right or wrong, but it is definitely true that this is what father wants to command. It is just that because of his attachment, because of his emotional inability, he is not speaking and therefore he is not communicating. So there is no doubt in that. I don't think that Mother Kaikeyi has made it up, because she is a very noble woman. She has such great love for me. And though Rama is speaking the truth at this point in time, each of those sentences only irk and anger Lakshmana even more. But Lakshmana also realizes by now that there is no changing this decision. And therefore Lakshmana says to Rama that, Rama, you might stop Kausalya saying that, you might stop your mother saying that she has her duty towards your father being the other half. But you know, I have no such binding on me now. I am not bound by what Kaikeyi has said, because you know, all said and done, she is not my mother. I am not bound by what Kausalya says. I am not bound by, I am not being told anything by Dasharatha. And therefore, I am a free man. I can make my decision. You can't stop me, Rama. You, whatever you have decided, you are doing, and I have decided now to follow you. And whatever may happen, you don't stop me. Please don't utter that word and say no. I am going to come with you. And, you know, even as he says this, Lakshmana says this, Rama is able to notice a kind of calm and peace descend on Mother Kausalya. And he feels that Kausalya will be comfortable, his mother will be comfortable if she knows that, you know, Rama is not alone. Lakshmana is also there with him. And that is why Rama, touched with the love and devotion of his brother, embraces him. And he actually agrees that Lakshmana can accompany him.
And the beauty of it is, you know, the whole reasoning which Rama gives, he says that he's in such a volatile situation, Lakshmana, that he might harm himself and harm others around him. So it is best he's not left alone. So he says, you know, the very fact that Lakshmana has managed to convince Rama so easily shows a sense of, you know, the comfort which Rama had with Lakshmana too. And the beautiful thing, we started off by saying that how this is called the Ayodhya Kanda. I remember when one of the scholars in Telugu came and gave a lecture on the Ayodhya Kanda of Ramayana. He made a very beautiful point. You know, Ayodhya, the meaning of the word Ayodhya is that which cannot be won over. Because it was a fortified city which had never been conquered by any other king other than the Ikshvaku dynasty. So it was called Ayodhya. But the word Ayodhya can also mean defeat. Yodhya is victory, Ayodhya is defeat. So no victory. So he went on to describe how this particular part of the Ramayana, nobody actually wins. You know, Dasharatha wanted to crown Rama, he could not. Kaikeyi wants to crown Bharata, she could not. And Kausalya and everybody want to stop Rama, none of them could stop. Kausalya wants to come with Rama, she is not able to. So everybody gets defeated. Actually, only three people win in this battle. That is Rama, Sita and Lakshmana. Sita, of course, we'll come to that. Lakshmana has managed to win his, you know, battle of going, right, to go. Rama is, of course, winning all the way. He has managed to defeat everybody. But whatever people set out to achieve in this Ayodhya Kanda, you will find that everybody were defeated. And later, of course, later in the story, we see how even Bharata was defeated in his attempt to bring back Rama to the forest. So that is the beauty
from
of the
forest. Yes.
From the forest. This is the beauty of the Ayodhya Kanda, actually.
Superb. Very nicely put. And Prem, actually, Rama tells Lakshmana that it is not right that you just join me like
right,
that. You
exactly.
need to seek permission from your mother. You have to go and seek Sumitra's permission. And you know, before we describe how Lakshmana meets Sumitra and actually seeks permission, I think a word of introduction for Sumitra, because many times Swami has spoken so highly of Sumitra, saying that Sumitra means Sumitra, good friend. In many discourses, he has extolled her. Possibly we could play one discourse clip where Swami speaks about Sumitra.
Sure, we'll just play this clip. Same, it's with the 99 discourse which Swami delivered during Ramnavami, where Swami speaks about the virtue of Mother Sumitra.
Kausalya chellalu Sumitra.
Sumitra is sister of Kausalya.
Sumitra cheppindi Lakshmana Ramun venta pampinche samayam lopala.
Then Lakshmana was to accompany Rama. Sumitra said,
Lakshmana,
Lakshmana,
neevu aranyaniki potunnavani neevu bhavinchavaddu.
Never think that you are going to the forest.
రాములు లక్ష్మణుడు లేనటువంటి యొక్క అయోధ్యనే మాకు అరణ్యము.
ది సిటీ ఆఫ్ అయోధ్య ఇస్ అ ఫారెస్ట్ వితౌట్ యూ రామ అండ్ లక్ష్మణ.
సీతారాములు ఉన్నటువంటి అయోధ్యనే లంకనే ఒక అరణ్యమే మీకు అయోధ్య.
దట్ వెరీ ఫారెస్ట్ వి సీతారామ ఇస్ అయోధ్య ద సిటీ.
కనుక లక్ష్మణ,
లక్ష్మణ
ఆశీర్వదిస్తూ చెప్పింది.
Blessing him.
నీవు సీతారామును తల్లిదండ్రులుగా నీవు భావించి వారిని సేవించు.
కన్సిడర్ సీతారామ యాజ్ యువర్ ఫాదర్ అండ్
మదర్. సేవలు ఏమాత్రం కూడా కించిత్తైన కూడా లోపం రాకుండా చూసుకోమని.
సీ దట్ యూ సర్వ్ దెమ్ ఫుల్ వెల్.
అలాంటి సుమిత్ర లోకంలో ఉన్నారా?
డూ యూ ఫైండ్ సుమిత్ర ఆఫ్ దట్
కౌసల్య గొప్పది అంటున్నారు.
కౌసల్య
గైడ్ గొప్పది అంటున్నారు, కానీ సుమిత్ర కంటే గొప్పవారు లోకంలో లేరు.
దేర్ ఇస్ నో అదర్ ఉమెన్ గ్రేటర్ దెన్ సుమిత్ర.
మంచి మిత్రుడు ఆమె.
సూ గుడ్ మిత్ర ద ఫ్రెండ్.
కుమారుని ఆశీర్వదించి రామ సేవ చేసుకుంటూ ఉండమని చెప్పి చెప్తుంది. ఎక్కడైనా
షీ బ్లెస్ హర్ సన్ సో హాస్ టు సర్వ్ గాడ్ సిన్సియర్.
అలాంటి తల్లులు ఈనాడు తయారు కావాలి. అలాంటి భార్యలు ఈనాడు తయారు కావాలి. అలాంటి సోదరులు ఈనాడు తయారు కావాలి. అందరి ఎందు ఐకమత్యం అభివృద్ధి పరచుకోవాలి.
లెట్ దేర్ బి యూనిటీ.
ఆ ఐకమత్యమే జగత్ యొక్క సంరక్షణ.
దట్ యూనిటీ ప్రొటెక్ట్స్ ద వరల్డ్.
నో ఇట్ సో we find so easy to find this common thread between what Swami considers as an ideal mother, ideal wife, ideal brother. Anybody who sticks to Rama, wants to be with Rama, Swami says they're ideal. Anybody who promotes the other person to stick to Rama, Swami says they're ideal. Anybody who takes you away from God is not ideal. In fact, that is the definition Bhagwan had once given for a true friend. A true friend is one who takes you to God. Anybody who takes you to God is a good friend. Anybody who takes you away from God is not your friend, is an enemy, though he appears or he or she appears to be good, kind and loving. So here is Swami praising Sumitra because she did not stop Lakshmana. She in fact encouraged Lakshmana to go to Rama. In fact, on another occasion, Swami has narrated how Sumitra says that both my sons can never become the kings because Kaikeyi's son has a chance of becoming the king because Dasharatha has promised Kaikeyi's father that I will make the son from Kaikeyi to become the emperor. And Kausalya's son has the chance of being a king because she is the senior most wife. But what about my two children? And therefore she says, I offer one child in service to Bharata, that is Shatrughna, one child in service to Rama, that is Lakshmana. And we also discussed in the beginning of the Ramkatha Rasavahini how Lakshmana was happy in the cradle with Rama and how Shatrughna was happy in the cradle with Bharata. So in all this, Swami reminds us that we should not forget the great sacrifice that Sumitra did for God's sake, for the sake of Rama. And Swami on one hand redeems Kaikeyi, Swami speaks highly of Sumitra, and usually people always speak about Kausalya's glory, not speaking about Kaikeyi and Sumitra. And it's only apt that the Lord himself comes and redeems his lesser spoken of mothers.
Exactly. And just like the mothers, among the mothers Kausalya is spoken high of, among the spouses of these four princes, we've always heard people speak much about Mother Sita. But Swami also speaks about the virtue of Urmila, the wife of Lakshmana. Maybe we don't have the time for that. We will play out a clip where Swami says that how virtuous she was, because just as Lakshmana had to take the permission of his mother, he also had to take the permission of his wife Urmila before he proceeds towards the forest. And that interaction is very, very special. Again, you know, Swami alone has spoken about these characters. Swami has spoken about Urmila. Swami has spoken so highly about, in the later parts of the story, you will see the wife of Vali, the wife of Sugriva being extolled, the wife of Ravana being extolled. Some of these lesser characters who often Swami would say, you know, the situations you land yourself in life may not be completely in your control, but the way you carry yourself in that situation actually makes what you are. And many of these characters show that very beautiful, lesson, give that very beautiful lesson to all of us. But before we speak about Urmila, I think that'll be good fortnight, dear listeners, because the next 2 weeks will be a general topic. We'll continue the Ramakatha Rasvayani after those 2 weeks. So we'll continue the story. We have not yet gone to the forest with Rama. We'll do that maybe in that next sitting.
With that, we offer this segment, as always, at the lotus feet of our dear Swami, praying that He inspires us through whatever He wishes us to speak. And we also offer our prostrations to Lord Hanuman, who is always with us here kindly when we speak the story of His Lord Rama, our Lord Rama. Dear listeners, we welcome your feedback. You can write as always to listener@radiosai.org. Any thoughts, your feelings, your feedback, questions, whatever, we will be eager to receive them, read them and try to respond to them to the best of our ability. With that, we bring this segment to a close. We leave you with this song, on the other side of which you will be joined by Brother Chandu with his segment, Love to Love. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
पतित पावन सीताराम रघुपति राघव राजा राम पतित पावन सीताराम रघुपति राघव राजा राम रघुपति राघव राजा राम पतित पावन सीताराम पतित पावन सीताराम राम राम जय राजा राम 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 जय राजा राम
राम जय राजा राम
राम राम जय साईं राम
राम राम जय साईं राम
राम राम जय पतित पावन
सीताराम
रघुपति राघव राजा राम
रघुपति राघव राजा राम
पतित पावन सीताराम राम राम जय राजा राम
राम राम जय राजा राम
राम राम जय साईं राम
राम राम जय साईं राम
राम राम जय साईं राम
राम राम जय
राम राम जय राजा
पतित पावन सीता।